Eat, Pray, Love made Elizabeth Gilbert one of the most read and beloved writers of our time. While Eat, Pray, Love was Gilbert's personal memoir, many readers took it as a stimulus to make changes, large and small, in their own lives. In the decades since Eat, Pray, Love was published, people worldwide have sought further advice from Elizabeth Gilbert on how to lead a bold and creative life. Gilbert's TED Talk about creativity has nearly 10 million views, making it one of the most viewed TED Talks of all time. And this past fall, she went on tour with Oprah, speaking to over 100,000 people along the way. Well, she's now written a nonfiction treatise on creativity. It is entitled Big Magic: Creative Living Beyond Fear. In Big Magic, Gilbert digs deep into her own process to explain where inspiration comes from, how ideas form and grow, and how to overcome the fears and suffering that inevitably arise when we push at boundaries and take a leap into the unknown. We welcome Elizabeth Gilbert back to the roundtable. Wonderful pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for being with us. It's always great to have you on the show. And
yeah, thank you.
I love having you back. It's been a while.
It's nice to be back. I appreciate you trusting me to return.
Well, you always knew you would return. I mean, not to the show, but you always knew you would return and go out and talk again to your readers and people, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have no choice. I can't seem to stop doing this work. And so, definitely I'm always going to be showing up again and again.
When it comes to this idea of creativity, the whole idea to me from Eat, Pray, Love, and also, of course, from just the work that you've been doing lately, has to do, sure, with creativity, but it has a lot to do with the unknown and that fear of the unknown.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing about it. Fear and creativity, I've decided, the way I say it is that they're conjoined twins. They share the same womb, they were born together, they share all the same major organs. It's impossible to live a creative life without having to face and cope with the reality of fear, because your creativity will demand of you that you constantly enter into realms that have uncertain outcome, and your fear, by its very nature, hates a realm with uncertain outcome more than anything else in the world. So your creativity is always going to be saying, yes, let's do this, let's try, and your fear is always going to be saying, absolutely not, shut it down. Shut it down, you know? I don't know how
right.
This ends, and therefore the answer is no. And I feel like, as a person who's inherently both very creative and very fearful, because I am a tremendously nervous and anxious and high-strung person by my very design, I've had to spend my entire life sort of trying to figure out how to negotiate that in order to create the most interesting life that I possibly can for myself without also having a nervous breakdown.
So while we're talking about ourselves, let me just ask this question, because, yeah. and if this gets convoluted, I apologize, but to me there is a differentiation, because I find myself getting very anxious and very worked up when I don't know what is happening and I don't know what my schedule is. I don't know where I'm going to be. I don't know what's going to work out.
Right.
And that to me isn't really as much a fear or a fear of the unknown. It's just not, I guess, basically not having control over things you can't have control over.
Which is, hey, listen, you're talking to an old pro at control issues. there's a line in Eat, Pray, Love where I said to my friend Richard from Texas, he points out my control issues, and I said, oh, it's so weird that you notice that, because I don't think people notice that about me right away. And he said, Liz, Ray Charles could see your control issues. This is very obvious to anybody who sees you. And I do actually think that while we call it control issues or anxiety, I think you scratch another layer underneath it, it's fear. It's fear that you're not in charge of what's going on. It's fear of a lack of agency. It's fear that things might turn out exactly as you planned. You know, all of that. I encounter that kind of stuff every day, and I feel like the only antidote to it is just a tremendous reserve of empathy and self-forgiveness, to just say, look, this is perfectly normal. You're a human being having a human being experience on Earth. This is what it's like. It's okay, you know, and it's okay if you can't stop feeling like this, too. It's okay if you feel like this for 2 weeks. You're really anxious right now. That's okay. But we're going to do this thing anyway. I feel like most of my life is me saying to myself, I know this freaks you out, but we're doing this anyway. And it's going to be okay, even if it's not okay.
Whatever the pursuit may be, and in this case, a creative or artistic pursuit, we want the control because we want to be able to do what we want to do. So in some ways, what we're setting up is guidelines for ourselves so we allow ourselves the best possible space to be creative.
That's true. However, what I see happening a lot in people's lives, and sometimes I fall prey to this, is that they do not practice their creativity because they are not able to set up the best possible space. You know,
right.
And so because of the fact that they don't have a perfect writing room like they picture a writer should have, or they don't have the right amount of calm time in which to create, or they don't have a studio, or they don't have access to, the right musical recording stuff, they don't have the right collaboration, they don't live in the right city. Like, there's all these forces going on, and their interpretation of all those forces is, I don't have the right anything. I don't have the right piece right now, I don't have the right stability, I don't have the right partner, I don't have the right job, I don't have the right kind of money, I don't have the right kind of training, and so they don't do anything. And that's a kind of perfectionism that is a great serial killer of creativity. There's a line that I quote in Big Magic that comes from a letter that that Herman Melville wrote to his friend Nathaniel Hawthorne, saying, "I'm just longing for this perfect green grass, slow summer days in which to create, because that is the realm in which a person should create. And I'm so pulled in all these different directions by my demands that I simply cannot find the time to work." This is the dream of all creative people, is that someday we're going to be handed these perfectly long stretch of green grass, summer calm days in which to create. And the reality is, mostly we won't. You know, the world is a compression chamber, and most of the time you're not going to be able to set up the perfect environment in which to work. Melville never did, and yet he managed to write Moby Dick anyway. You know, and so for me, so much of it is just about saying, this is not the perfect time for me to be doing this. This is not the perfect space for me to be working in. These are not the perfect people for me to be around. But if I'm going to keep waiting for some sort of creative Eden to arise, I'm either going to make myself so insane trying to create that thing, or I'm just never going to get this work done. And so I'll take this imperfect, wonky, backwards, crazy day, and I will find 15 minutes within it in a bus stop to try to do some work. That's how creativity gets done.
When it comes, let's use you as an example here, and when you, after Eat, Pray, Love, you want to be creative again, and you want to do something that is the follow-up. So how much does it get in your head that in some way, shape, or form, you want to do something better, do something different, do something, but you have a creative pursuit, and I would think that could just bat the hell out of your any courage that you would have. Because it will always be compared to what you have just achieved.
And no one will do that comparing more than me.
Sure.
You know, because that's how we are. I mean, the person that we're usually the most in competition against is, of course, ourselves. And it was really interesting after Eat, Pray, Love, because people would come up to me with great concern and they would say, not realizing the anxiety button that they were pushing as they said it, but they would say, God, how are you ever going to beat that? I'd be like, thanks, I hadn't thought of that. The answer was, if you just sort of take the anxiety off that question and really just look at it, you know, on a blank page unemotionally, the answer is, I cannot beat that. You know, Eat, Pray, Love was a phenomenon, and the definition of a phenomenon is, you know, something that can never be repeated and something that you don't really know how it happened in the first place. There was no way. It's not possible to write another book that can sell over 10 million copies. It's just not how I do things. My other books have sold dozens of copies by comparison. You know, and so if my only measure for doing my work is that I'm going by this sort of very American standard that every year you have to do better than the year before,
right.
And that you always have to be beating yourself and competing beating your best time and your personal best, my personal best was done. But I was only 35 years old. So now either I kill myself trying to beat something that cannot be beaten, or I stop working because I just think, well, if you can't win, why bother? Or I have to find another reason to work. And the good thing is I already had that reason inherent within me because I'd spent years not getting published and getting rejected. I'd spent years writing with no promise of reward and only doing it because knowing that bringing forth this work out of myself is the highest expression of my life as a human being. And if I don't have this thing within me, then I'm just a meat puppet, basically just waiting to die, you know, just paying bills and dying. And that's not going to do it for me. And so I'm going to create books because I love making them. And whatever comes of them next is none of my business. And that's how I continued. And that's how I plan to continue for as long as I'm, you know, physically and mentally capable of doing it.
You do it for you. And there's a point where, as you say, you know, the planets only align once, you know, maybe a lifetime. So for that to happen again is inconceivable. Although, and you point this out in the book, it doesn't have to happen in that form exactly the same way. It can happen in a different form in a different way.
And what happens that's the really cool part is the process of making the thing.
Right.
You know, the thing about creativity is that it's an inherently existential crisis-provoking activity because it's an inherently irrational thing to do with yourself. You know, what you're doing when you sit down to do any sort of creative project whatsoever, whether it is massive and has magnitude or it's small and personal, what you're doing is that you're saying, I'm going to take the most precious resource that I've got, which is my short, mortal, limited human life. We all know we're going to die. We all know our time is precious. I'm going to take this irreplaceable treasure of my time, and I'm going to invest it in sitting down and putting an enormous amount of effort and energy into making something that absolutely nobody wants or needs. You know, like, does the world need another novel? No. Do we need another painting? No. Are people like, please, more poems? No. Like, we don't need this stuff. It doesn't produce anything. It doesn't, you know, on a very pragmatic, rational level, it's a really weird thing to do, you know? And so it's going to make you have crises of purpose and conscience where you just go, what am I even doing this for? And the answer is, because inspiration wants to work with you just as much as you want to work with it. You're in some sort of a collaboration with the mysteries, with the magic, with the ancient human practice of taking nothing and making something out of it for no particular reason whatsoever. We are the creative apes. This is what we're like. This is what we like to do. And doing that and working with that process unfolds aspects within yourself that you might not have even known were there. And I frankly can't think of anything better to do with my time than that.
Well, the book is beautiful. It's really wonderful. It's entitled Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear, and it's published by Riverhead Books. Elizabeth Gilbert, it's wonderful to speak to you again. I wish you all the luck in the world, and I thank you so much for sharing time with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe. I enjoyed it, as always.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Elizabeth Gilbert's new book is Big Magic. It's published by Riverhead. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.